with everyone. I hope you're having a good week. And again, our tefillos are still with the families that are suffering, and the bracha for Refuah Shleima, for the pitsuim and all the victims of terror. I wanted to do two things tonight. I have a few more comments on Kibbutz Aviyim, but then going me'inyan le'inyan, I'm going to move into issues of conversion, because it'll be connected. The Gabi Kibbutz Aviyim, I believe the very last thing we talked about, and again, most of it I'm not going to repeat, is we talked about the issue of doing medical procedures to a parent. Now, generally speaking, it is anyway discouraged for parents to be doctors for children or children to be doctors for parents because of emotional involvement. But even routine procedures, injections, taking out a splinter, do raise halakhic problems because there is an iser d'oraisa of causing a parent to bleed. That is called makeh, hitting a parent. And the Gemara says that even if it's done for benign purposes, the drawing of blood is a capital crime. It is an aveira for which there can be a chi of misa. As a result, the Gemara already discusses whether a son is allowed to remove a splinter from his father's foot, if that could cause bleeding, or could a son do a bloodletting in the days when they used to do bloodletting, although I understand leeches are coming back. They're back, but okay. Those types of things. And there is a machlokas. There are poskim that say, unless it's a matter of life and death, a son is not allowed to do anything that will involve the possibility of blood. The Ramah's ruling is that a son is allowed to perform these medical procedures if there's nobody else. Now, that's what the Ramah says. Now, the question becomes, what do we mean if there's nobody else? What if there's always somebody else, but if there's somebody else who charges money, will that justify it? And poskim have said yes. And moreover, poskim have also said that even if it's a matter of emotional comfort, if the parent, for whatever reason, is more comfortable with a child doing it, that is called there is nobody else. And I would also add, too, that if by the time you would get somebody else, there would be a time factor of pain and suffering. In other words, somebody's in pain now, you can relieve the pain now, you can get them to a doctor in 45 minutes. It would appear that for those 45 minutes, there is nobody else. And if there is nobody else, it would be permitted. But within the family, it would actually be preferable for a grandchild to do it to the grandparents instead of the son doing it to the parents. That's one way of doing it and the like, because the grandchild does not have this particular aveira. Now, one issue about grandparents that's very, very fascinating. There is, of course, a mitzvah to honor grandparents. And of course, I think most of us honor grandparents, but it's important to know that the mitzvah of honoring parents is actually greater than the mitzvah of honoring grandparents. So this raises a very interesting scenario. Let's say, Baruch Hashem, if people are fortunate that your own parents come visit you and the like. So who should sit at the head of the table? It's a very, very, very interesting question. One might think, you know, I should honor my father sitting at the head of the table. But Rav Yaakov Kornetsky made a point that when he would visit Rav Shmuel, he would visit his other children, he insisted that they sit at the head of the table because the children have to know that the head of their mishpacha is Abba and Ima. Now, what about serving? Interesting practical question. Let's say you have a situation where the grandkids, usually granddaughters, because boys tend not to be so great at serving, but should be boys too. Let's say the grandkids are doing the serving. So when they bring out the chicken or they bring out the soup, should they place the bowl before Bubby and Zadie first? Or should they place the bowl before Abba and Ima first? So listen to what Rav Yaakov said. They should place the bowl before Abba and Ima, and then Abba should pass the bowl to his father. So that way, everybody is showing the appropriate kavod. The grandchild, you know, honors his parents, and then his parent shows honor to his parent. That's a very beautiful way of showing in which each one is showing the appropriate kavod, and that would be the minimum. So ultimately, indeed, Bubby and Zaini do get served first, but they get served first from their children, as should be, as should be preference. That's a horror to remember. Now, let me just say a few words, because this is going to lead to a totally new topic, but I have a good segue. And that is, okay, we understand you have to honor your father and your mother, you have to have reverence for your father and mother, that's del resto. But unfortunately, the nature of life today is that we have many different family combinations. We have divorces, we have people are widows, either widows or widowers, right? Alman or almana. We have blended families, we have step-parents, we have conversions, all of those different things. So how does kibud avim work in all of these different scenarios? So let's first talk about step-parents. Let's say, unfortunately, a person dies, and the living spouse remarries. What are the obligations of the children of the first marriage in terms of honoring the step-parent who came in from the second marriage, whether it's a man or a woman? So it's interesting that the Gemara in Kesubis has a very interesting story. The Gemara in Kesubis discusses the death of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the great Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the compiler of the Mishnah, and it gives us the whole discussion that before he died, he gave his children certain instructions. And one of his instructions was, "Hi zaharu b'chavod imchem." Be very, very careful to properly honor your mother. So the Gemara asks the obvious kasha, why does he have to give them an instruction? There's a mitzvah in the Torah to honor your father and mother. So the Gemara says this was not their mother, this was their stepmother. And in other words, he had married a second wife, and this was not their mother, so there is no mitzvah of kibud aim, and therefore he had to give them a mitzvah. But then the Gemara asks, not true. We darshan, from the extra word es. The word es is an extra word. It could have just said kabeid, avicha, imecha. So es is used by Chazal to include more in the category, that there is a mitzvah of honoring a stepmother. So the Gemara says, b'feirush, there's a mitzvah d'oraisa to honor a stepmother. Mitzvah d'oraisa. So back to the question. So why did he have to give them an instruction? So listen to what the Gemara says. The mitzvah of honoring a stepparent is because that is considered how you honor your parent. I honor my parent by honoring his spouse. Consequently, that would only apply when the parent is still alive. Once the parent dies, there would no longer be a biblical commandment of honoring the step-parent, and that's why he's telling them, I want you to honor my my wife, even after my death. So, taking that Gemara into account, we have the following conclusion. The mitzvah d'oraisa of honoring a parent applies min ha-Torah to a step-parent kol zman the step-parent is married to the biological parent. Once the biological parent died, or once the biological parent divorced the step-parent, there is no longer a mitzvah d'oraisa of kibud avim. But here there's a very important point that is obvious, and the poskim don't always mention it. That is, even if there's no mitzvah d'oraisa of kibud avim, there is still a mitzvah of hakaras hatov. If the step-parent, now that may depend, if the step-parent raised the person as a child, whether or not there was a formal adoption makes no difference, because halacha, formal adoptions or not formal adoptions are not really determinative here. That's a legal proceeding. Then obviously there's going to be gratitude, menschlichkeit, hakaras hatov. In some cases, even if something is not a technical mitzvah of kibud avim, there will be a mitzvah of hakaras hatov. But that would be the halacha. In other words, technically, the mitzvah of honoring a step-parent in terms of the mitzvah only applies, kol zman he or she is married, to the biological parent.
When there's a divorce, the child still has an obligation to honor his
Absolutely.
Sometimes there might be a conflict between honoring the biological parent and honoring the stepmother.
Yeah, so there the answer is fairly simple. In the case of a biological father and mother who get divorced. The halacha actually is both of them are equal, and therefore you don't give precedence, you know, you decide who you want to follow, whatever it would be. But in the case of a biological parent versus a step-parent, it is crystal clear that the biological parent has priority. Now, you have to honor both, but the biological parent has priority in that case.
You mentioned Hakaras HaTov if the child was raised by the stepmother. What about Hakaras HaTov for just the stepmother taking care of the father?
That is a good point. I mean, there are different levels of Hakaras HaTov, for sure. But certainly, if somebody took care of an aging parent in their last years and was a devoted spouse, certainly they are owed a debt of gratitude and besides. There is no question. And again, I want to point out that, you know, the Chazon Ish, we talk about four parts of the Shulchan Aruch. The Chazon Ish used to say there's a fifth part of the Shulchan Aruch. And the fifth part of the Shulchan Aruch is the part that's not written down, but it should be understood as part of the basic mental part of being a Jew. And, you know, I'm talking about some technical halachas here, but obviously, a person of refinement, a person of Yiras Shamayim, a person of Midos Tovos is not going to take a step-parent, even if the parent married as an adult, and throw her out in the street or whatever it is. So unfortunately, sometimes I hear different stories like that. And this is an awful, awful, awful thing. You treat all people with menschlich type derech eretz. And if somebody was a devoted companion, a partner, in fact, sometimes we get into very tricky questions. Tricky questions. Maybe I shouldn't mention it tonight, but I'll just throw it out. Let's say the devoted partner was not a married partner. They were living together without marriage sometimes in the non-religious stuff. Or may have been a non-Jew. I mean, I have been confronted with situations where you had an elderly man who was not religious, and the woman who took care of him in a loving relationship for the last 10 years of his life was a non-Jew. Maybe they were married legally, civilly, like in Chutz La'aretz, maybe they weren't. If you're a child, right, it was not my personal situation, but these are situations that I'm familiar with. If you're a child, and you're from, how are you miyaches to this woman? On one hand, she was devoted. She cooked for him, she took him to the doctor, she cared for him, she was everything emotionally that he needed. On the other hand, the relationship was totally sinful. So what do? Do you just make believe she never existed? Do you send your thank you? So it would appear that although you cannot legitimate the relationship, you cannot, as it were, even call her wife or whatever it is, you can't imply that, but you can certainly, the same way that you would express Hakaras HaTov to a nurse or a social worker, you can express the gratitude, and you should express the gratitude for what she did. Not to do so is, first of all, a chilul Hashem. Yeah, but here it gets a little more complicated because you really cannot legitimate, you can't, you know, imply that there was something okay about the relationship. But Hakaras HaTov, there still is, you know, it's interesting. Hakaras HaTov is not a stira, it's not a contradiction to refusal to legitimate, meaning both things have to go on at the same time. And that's a bit of a delicate balance. And certainly, obviously, it's you're not really even keep an aim in any sense. But Hakaras HaTov, they're still going to be. So that's kind of the idea of step-parents. Now, let me mention adoption. Adoption. Now, Chazal have a sentence that says, Kol ha-megadel yasom v'yasoma b'toch beisa. Anyone that raises an orphan in their house, mala alav ha-kasov ki'ilu yalda, it is as if you gave birth to him. In spite of that beautiful sentiment, it is not halachic. It's not halachically true. For example, you do not fulfill the mitzvah of pru revu by adoption. There's one opinion of Shlomo Kluger, a great gadol of the 19th century, who says you do fulfill, but all poskim except for him say you do not fulfill. Moreover, technically, an adopted child does not have the mitzvah of pur ribu towards his adoptive parents, even if they adopted him from birth. Technically, if he's a Jewish now, he owes, it's an amazing thing, he owes the chiyuv to the people who gave him up. Ad kidei kach, that under the strict letter of the halakha, an adopted child, Jewish or not Jewish, makes no difference here, if he was converted, does not have to sit Shiva for his adopted parents. He does not have to say Kaddish for his adopted parents.
Now, this is they're Jewish?
Yes, that's correct. The adoptive parents, not the natural parents. Now, this is the strict letter of the halacha. The poskim have said, as a matter of basic hakaras hatov, because these were the people who emotionally were his parents, these were the people who raised him, these are the people who gave him everything, as a matter of hakaras hatov, he should sit shiva, and he should absolutely say Kaddish for 11 months, like everybody else. But again, technically, it's not a chiyuv. Now again, this is a classic example where anybody who would say, I'm not going to sit shiva for my adoptive parents because it's not a chiyuv, that would be considered a rishus. He'd be within his rights, so to speak. But no decent person would act that way. And the poskim have recognized that there is such a concept as an optional shiva. But what's interesting is, it is interesting, because this could create a little bit of attention, because it would appear, therefore, that since an adopted child is not mechuyev in the veilus, so with respect to davening for the amos, he would not be doche achi. In other words, like this, we know that when a person is an avela, when a man is an avela for a parent, he is a chiyuv, and therefore he is given priority to daven for the amos. So let's say you have two avela. One person is an avel over parents who adopted him, and another person is an avel over biological parents. It would appear al pidin that the chiyuv would be the biological. So again, this could create, unfortunately, a little bit of bad feeling if people don't fully understand this. So, in any case, whenever there's machlokas, you should always be mavatir to the other person. Don't make any machlokas over this. But technically, this would be the halachic rule. Yeah.
I heard of a situation where the child was abandoned by his father when he was an infant. Never saw his father, never heard from his father, 30, 40 years. And then he heard that his father had died. So he went and asked the question, should he sit Shiva and should he say Kaddish? But his father, who never contributed anything, yeah, child support, emotional support, yeah, or anything, and he was told that he should sit Shiva.
Should, yes.
And should say Kaddish.
That is correct. That is correct. And I will tell you, that is the halacha. I will also tell you that is actually therapeutic for a person. It creates a certain closure. You know, a person goes through life being abandoned by a parent, even if they had, Baruch Hashem, a loving adoptive parent, there is a certain pain in their soul that may not go away totally. And by going through a ritual of Kaddish and Shiva, they're able to close that off. And it is a ritualist for them. I mean, I know people who were estranged from, wasn't exactly your case, but they were estranged from their parents for many, many, many years. And their initial gut reaction was, they weren't so grim. I mean, why should I mourn? I had nothing to do with them. And yet they found that the process of grieving allowed them to deal with their own grief in being separated for so many years. But that, in any case, that absolutely is the halacha. Now, let me mention a final variation of gerus, conversion. And I just want to give you two scenarios of conversion and see how this works for kibbutz of the egg. Scenario number one is the whole family converts. And let's say you have, a non-Jewish family, and the non-Jewish family converts, right? It happens, right? We have all sorts of stories of these 10 children, families who grew up in the Ozarks or whatever it is, and they all become religious and they move to Yerushalayim, etc. So the question becomes like this. We have a rule in the laws of Geirus, a very important rule, that says, Ger Sheniskayer Kekatan Shenolakam. That means when a person converts to Judaism, they are considered a newly created entity. That actually means that Geirus erases all pre-existing familial relationships in halacha. And that therefore means the following. Under Torah law, this may sound very bizarre to you, but this is the Torah law, Doraisa. If a father and daughter convert, the father is halachically permitted Doraisa to marry the daughter. A genetic counselor would not advise this, but they're not related. If a mother and a son convert, if a brother and a sister convert, they are not related. They are permitted to marry each other. Now, I said to Oraisa, so please don't quote me as I'm saying, you know, this is allowed. Midrabanan, it is prohibited because being a Jew should never be easier than being a Goy. When they were Goyim, under the seven commandments of Noah, this type of incest is prohibited. So what are you going to say? They become Jewish and now it's permitted? People will say, oh, Judaism is less holy than being a guy. So because of that rule, so please don't quote me as saying it was permitted. It is lemaisa prohibited, but under Torah law, it is permitted. Okay. Don't write say it's
Yaakov
permitted.
Yaakov and Leah and Rachel wasn't getting opposition.
Well, in fact, that's one of the answers that the Maharal gives, the old question. The Avos kept the mitzvahs of the Torah before they were given. And one of the commandments of the Torah is that although polygamy was permitted, you could not marry two sisters. How could Yaakov marry two sisters? And again, the Maharal has many, many answers on this. But one of the terutzim the Maharal says is that Rachel and Leah, by accepting the religion of the Avos, are like Gioris. And therefore, as two sisters who converted, they were no longer related. And cut and shenolah. I mean, the Maral, the Gur Aryeh in Parshas Vayigash actually says that. By the way, an answer that he brings in the name of the Ramban, which he doesn't like, but the Ramban says in the Chumash a different answer. That's right. The Avos kept the whole Torah only when they lived in Eretz Yisrael, in the palace of the king, and not when they were in Chutz La'aretz. And therefore, that's why Rachel died as soon as they come back to Eretz Yisrael, because then he's not allowed to marry two sisters. Right? Yeah.
Supposing a child, a male Jewish child, was given up for adoption, adopted, but he was the son of a Kohen. When he is adopted, does he keep the Kohen?
Okay, I'll address that. He does, but I'll address it. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah.
What you said about Rachel and Leah.
Yep.
I learned that the Shvatim buried their sisters.
Yes.
As an example, Yisachar buried Asher's twin sisters.
Right. So how did that work? Right.
How did it work? Because the Torah wasn't. I was told because the Torah hadn't been given yet, and they wanted so badly to stay within the family. It was very important to stay.
Yeah. So this is something the Maharal says too. The Maharal says that technically, since the Torah wasn't given yet, this was permitted. Okay. But we do have a principle that the Avos did keep the Torah before it was given. But the Maharal says when there were very important reasons, since it wasn't a chiv, it was just a hanhoga of the Avos, that could be set aside for something important, such as there were no other suitable women who would be capable of building Am Yisrael. That's correct. That hetzer does not exist after the Torah is given, but you're correct. The Maharal ultimately says that the idea that the Avos kept the whole Torah should not be understood as an absolute rule. I mean, that was their normal behavior, but that could be superseded at various times. Now, I'll get to your question. I'll get to your question shortly about Kohen, but let me just mention. So, let's assume you have a whole family that converts. Since the rule is Ger Shenitzgayer Kekatan Shenolad Dami, that's the Lashon, then technically, the children are not related to their parents anymore. And therefore, if you ask me, is there a technical mitzvah of kibud av v'aim? The answer is no. But we have the principle, once again, of hakaras hatov and decency. Essentially, if a family converts, the children are treated like adopted children, and we will apply the same principles that we apply for adoption. They will certainly sit shiva, they will certainly be mitabel, but technically they are not chibudim. Right? Again, the same thing. Because Gershon Iskayer can cut the Shemei Lodami. Now, let me just give you a variation on that, which is even a bit more dramatic. This is, in fact, a tshuva for Raja Yosef. What if a person converts and his parents didn't convert? His parents are still goyim, not that everybody did. His parents are non-Jews. There, for sure, there is no mitzvah of kibud at the end, but Rav Avadia makes the point, and I think it's an important point, that the obligations of gratitude for those who gave you life and those who raised you will even apply towards non-Jewish parents. And not only that, his psak was. Well, he didn't say it's in Shiva, he didn't say that, but he said it is proper for a ger to say Kaddish for a non-Jewish parent. Now, many poskim do disagree with this, not because you shouldn't have hakaras atel, but they say Kaddish is a miyuchad dika prayer for the elevation of a Jewish soul, and it doesn't do its job for a non-Jewish soul. But he did say, again, this is his psak, please, that Kaddish should be said. Now, what about Shiva? So, when I was a rabbi in Silver Spring, you know, again, I had several situations of people who were gerim. Actually, sometimes they could be Jewish and they have a non-Jewish father. Again, this could arise even if you're Jewish. You're Jewish and you have a non-Jewish father. Or you're a ger and you have non-Jewish parents and somebody dies. So what we did in these cases is we had what you might call an evening of condolence. Meaning if somebody wanted, if somebody wanted, an evening where people would come and they would express their condolences and the families, they wanted to share memories or stories, they could do so. So it wouldn't be a Shiva and it wouldn't be for 7 days, but it would be a day or two, or a night or so where they would have a chance to share memories, and certainly if they wanted to have a kiddush or something like that, again, it may sound a little avant-garde, but there's really nothing wrong with it. It is appropriate. Again, keep in mind, in the case of a ger, the relationship of the two non-Jewish parents was not sinful in any way. You're not glorifying a sinful relationship. It might be different if it was a Jewish man married to a non-Jewish woman. If it's not a sinful relationship, it's okay to give them honor in some particular way. So this is an example where, once again, you need the fifth chelik of Shulchan Aruch, a certain amount of common sense and decency. Now, some gerim, for whatever reason, do create a break with their families. Whether that's right or not is another question. And for them, it's like they're a new person, and that past they don't want a part of. So for them, it's not necessarily a big loss. On the other hand, many people, rightfully so, love their parents, are connected to their parents. Sometimes their parents were the reason they became Jewish, in the positive sense that their parents' morality, like I know, for example, I know gerim that became Jewish in part because they were inspired by their parents telling them stories of how great the Jewish people were and the land of Israel and the state of Israel and all of these things. And it was their parents' love of the Jewish people that inspired these kids to explore. So the parents get reward for bringing their kids to Am Yisrael. So to simply say, oh, you're a ger, therefore you're not connected to that family, again, halachically it's true, but hakaras atov still exists. And I just want to say that there's a brisa in Tanid Ve'Aliyah, which is really a medrash, and the brisa says that if you are cruel towards the non-Jew, you will eventually be cruel towards the Jew. If you steal from the non-Jew, you will steal from the Jew. If you murder the non-Jew, you will murder the Jew. So you can't have midos that are divided. You can't really say, oh, they're going, who cares about it? You can't have that, because eventually that's going to make you callous and indifferent towards Jewish people as well. So even if you don't agree with the Rav Avadia's psak, as many poskim do not, that you say Kaddish for a non-Jewish parent, certainly something like a night of condolence or just giving mechana to someone who suffered a loss is a good thing to do and an appropriate thing to do, and it should be recognized in one way or another. Okay? Now,
What happens, because you said you are treated like an adopted child if the whole family converts, is there also the problem of the negligible recruitment?
Okay, so I want to talk about this a little bit, because this is already, I'm going to go into a new topic, but it's peripherally related, and your question is connected to that as well. And what is the general status of adoption in halakha? Now, adoption per se has no meaning in halakha whatsoever. Adoption is simply a legal proceeding. But essentially, adoption would just mean I take in a child that is not my child, I raise the child. What are the halakhic relationships that I have with that child? So first of all, you have to know the following, that adoption could be of a Jewish child, or adoption could be of a non-Jewish child. Which is better? You want to adopt? Which is better? So here's where the very interesting dichotomy. There is no question that it is a much greater mitzvah to give a Jewish child a home than a non-Jewish child. It is a much greater mitzvah. It's a mitzvah in either case, but towards a Jew, there's a greater obligation. However, a Jewish child may create more halachic problems. It's a greater mitzvah, but there are more halachic problems because if a Jewish child, for example, might be the product of adultery or incest, the child might have the stigma of mamzer. If it's a non-Jewish child that you're going to convert, that's going to erase all of those problems. So the kitzur, the poskim say, although it is a great, great mitzvah to adopt a Jewish child, but if you're not sure of the origin, it is halachically simpler, not better, simpler, to adopt a non-Jewish child. Now, if you adopt a non-Jewish child, the adoption alone does not make the child Jewish. Adoption does not make a child Jewish. If the child is not Jewish, the child would have to undergo a conversion. Now, convert a giyor. Now, the giyor of a katan is mila, bris mila, and mikvah. The giyor of a girl is just tevila, going to the mikvah. Now, people say, if you're not familiar, well, what do you mean? I adopt a one-month-old baby, and I throw him in the mikvah? What exactly? No, so obviously, a parent goes, usually Abba, will go into the mikvah with the baby. Dad could be wearing a bathing suit, or dad could just be wearing his clothes, however he wants to dunk, it's up to him. And what's interesting is this, a very interesting little bit of information, maybe you know this, but it's an interesting bit of knowledge. Babies have a swimming reflex up to 6 months. That means as long as they hit the water face first, they hold their breath, and they swim, they pump their little arms and legs. So when people say, oh, is it safe to take a baby into the mikvah, when the baby is so young, actually it is safer before 6 months. I mean, it's safe even afterwards, but it's even better before 6 months because the baby holds his breath and no water gets into the nose. But the reflex is triggered when he hits the water face first. So the baby is draped over Abba's arms and he just lowers his arms for a second. It takes the baby right up in front of the basin, and that is the tevila. It's done after the bris, usually you wait a few days.
Just one dunk?
One dunk is enough. Now, the baby will always cry afterwards, but I am told that the baby is not crying because of the water. The water was very pleasurable. The baby is crying because of the abrupt change of temperature, because the mikvah water is warm, and then it's cold outside, so it's cold. You know, so the baby is crying because of the cold.
Is it okay that he has his hands?
Yes, you don't have to let go. Because basically what you do is you wet your hands in the mikveh and then you hold the baby. So you don't have to drop. The baby doesn't have to drop even an inch. You can hold, you don't hold tight, but you know, you hold it better. So it only takes a minute. Now, the problem is this though. Here's the big problem. The problem is that geiris really has three requirements, not two. Let's say for a man. Mila, tevila, Kabbalat mitzvot.
And this is when he's older.
So what's that mean? So for an adult, the Kabbalat mitzvot is that I must declare before a Beis Din that I accept the 613 commandments of the Torah and I will abide by the Torah Shabbat Chassad and the Torah Shabbat Bet. The question is, if it's a baby or a minor, how does that work? So the Gemara in Kesubah says the following. The Gemara in Kesubah says that we may convert minors, either babies or any kid below bar mitzvah, even though they're not yet capable of Kabbalah's mitzvot, on the grounds that becoming a Jew is a privilege and a good thing, and we can give them the benefit without their permission. And in a sense, the parents initially are the ones that have to be mekabel the mitzvot. Now that means the following, that if you want to convert an adopted child, or even if it's your child, let's say you convert, I mean, let's say family converts, and they want to convert their minor children, same thing, because that's an adopted child, it's not their child anymore. I mean, it's an adopted child. So the parents must satisfy the basis that they will raise the child in accordance with halacha. Now, that is a very, very complicated problem, particularly in America, because, you know, because of this business about Israel, every Jewish parent who adopts a kid always says, I want a conversion that'll be good in Israel. Of course, the news is no conversion is good in Israel, so they can get the most Orthodox rabbi, he won't be accepted there. So you might say it's almost impossible. But basically, every Orthodox rabbi in America gets many, many conservative and reform parents who have adopted children and say, I want an Orthodox conversion because I want my child to have a conversion that will be accepted in the state of Israel. Now, the problem that a rabbi faces is, well, you want an Orthodox conversion. Now, we can do the bris and we can do the mikvah when they're willing to do that, but are you willing to raise your child as an Orthodox Jew? So this is where, unfortunately, some rabbis sometimes bend the rules in an improper way. In other words, they may not insist on everything. They may say, for example, well, if you agree to have a kosher home, and you agree that when your child is of school age, they will go to an Orthodox day school, sometimes they'll say, Zeh maspik, even if the parents are not religious. Because technically, we don't care if the parents are religious. You just have to have a commitment, they're going to raise the kid religious. But realistically, I mean, let me ask you, is that a reasonable scenario that parents, you know, are not religious, but kid will be raised religious? So it's a big problem. I mean, every rabbi, I mean, including myself, I mean, we face a lot of pressures to try to do these conversions when really they should not be done. Anyway, okay, but be it as it may, but going back to the question that was asked.
I just want to, yeah. Before you go,
yeah.
When the child becomes a boy, comes 13.
Yes, yeah, so let me mention that. Yeah, now, here is the rule. Since the child or the baby did not accept Judaism of their own accord, it was accepted on their behalf, the Gemara in Kesubos and the Shulchan Aruch Sof Paskins creates a very unusual rule. That when the child attains adulthood, which in the case of a girl is 12, and in the case of a boy is 13, they have the right to renounce their Judaism and become a goy. Now, here's the thing. An adult convert cannot do that. An adult ger, Judaism is a one-way street. Once you become Jewish, your conversion cannot be invalidated. And I know that you hear about invalidation of conversion. I'll discuss that in a few moments. But a baby or even a katan that converted can renounce it. Now, they don't have to accept Judaism. Here's how it works. It's a very small window. It is their birthday, one day. They have 24 hours to declare they don't want to be Jewish. If they fail to renounce their Judaism by the end of the day, they are automatically Jewish. They don't have to accept. It is the failure to renounce. That's why I tell parents of adopted children who are going to approach the bar mitzvah, don't be too tough on the bar mitzvah preparations, because the kid might say on his birthday, forget about all this stuff. Now, let me point out that if chas v'shalom, a child is not from, that is not a renunciation of Judaism, because it's the case that somebody wants to be a Jew, even if, you know, they're not keeping commandments. That's unfortunate. Renunciation is a very severe, and I've never encountered it, where a person literally says, I don't want to be a member of the Jewish people. That is rare. Now, I did come across one case, which halachically actually didn't work. I came across a case of a very frum boy. He was a very frum boy who was converted as a baby. And he decided that he wanted to become a goy because he thought that this way he doesn't get punished for his averus. So when he was 20, and he had mental problems, obviously, but he, when he was 20 years old, he was talking to me very seriously that, you know, he would really wants to be a guy, he wants to renounce his conversion, because that way he can get Olam Haba by keeping the seven commandments of Noach, and he wouldn't have all of these. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva that says, this rule that you have to renounce on your birthday or else only applies if you knew this halach. If you didn't know you were adopted, like in the olden days they used to not tell you, and you found out when you were 40, or you didn't know this halacha, and you found out when you were 40, you're given that day. The day that you find out, you can rescind it that day. But it's a very short opportunity, and it's not even 24 hours. I mean, if I found out 5 minutes before Shia, I may only have 5 minutes to make that decision. Now, the thing about adoption generally is that even if there's conversion, it does not confer the status. You're Jewish, but it doesn't make you a Kohen. So if a Kohen adopts a child, whether the child is Jewish or whether the child is converted, the child is a Jew, but the child is not a Kohen. Vice versa, if the child was a Kohen and he's adopted by a Yisrael, he doesn't lose the status of Kohen. Now, I'll give you a case that I'm aware of. Again, it's a sad case. It shows you that these are difficult issues. You know, Baruch Hashem, one of the privileges we have in Yerushalayim, in a lot of Eretz Yisrael, not all of Eretz Yisrael, is that Birchas Kohanim is recited every day, right? Unlike Chutz La'aretz, where we only do it on Yom Tov, here we do it every day. So I'm aware of a person, a family, a chashuv family, that adopted a child, a boy, and they have some natural children. So the way it works is, for Duchenim, father and three boys go up and duchen, and the fourth boy cannot duchen, he's not a Kohen. So because of this, and this happens every day, it's not just on Yom Tov, we could be aware of it, this happens every day. As a result, I'm just giving you a problem, I don't have any solution for it, as a result, this fourth son, the adopted son, does not daven in the same minyan with his father, because it's painful for him that there would be that type of distinction. So again, it's an issue. Now, on the other hand, if it would be in reverse, a rare case, the adopted son is the Kohen, he gets to that's going to be a much rarer case. Now, let me talk a little bit in this context of adoption about Yichud, Negia. I think we talked a little bit about it, and the like. We know, of course, that there are halachos about men and women being in seclusion, being alone, because improprieties could happen. We have halachas of affectionate touching, whether it's hugging, kissing, holding hands, again, whether social shaking hands is permitted or not is a big, big machlokas. The minhag in Eretz Yisrael is to be very strict on it. In America, some rabbanim were makel in shaking hands in a social context or a business context, especially if the other person put out their hand first. I'm not going to address that question. I don't want to talk about shaking hands tonight, but let's say hugging, kissing, romantically holding hands, obviously usher, with a woman, except for a wife, mother, father, grandparent. And that's the general rule. So the question immediately becomes, what is the status of an adopted child vis-a-vis all of these rules? We adopt. Now, obviously, the laws of Yichud and Negiah don't kick in when someone's a baby. You know, you can hug a baby. So there are certain ages where they kick in. Like, when is there an Isser of Yichud with another woman from a man? When is there an Isser of Negiah with another woman? What is the appropriate age? It doesn't start from birth, right? So here you have a big machlokas. For a boy, since a boy is not considered biologically capable of intercourse, and all of these things are gezeiros for Bia, so until he's 9 years old, So none of these halachas apply to boys below the age of 9. With respect to girls, we actually have 3 different shiurim. When do these laws of yichud and negiyah kick in for girls? The strictest view says as soon as a girl is 3 years old, an unrelated man cannot have yichud or physically touch her. That's 3. There's another shiur that says yichud and negiyah is mutter until the time that a girl might become a nida by menstruation, and we assume that that might be between 10 and 11. Today, this month is actually earlier than it used to be. There's an intermediate position, which I think most poskim say, and that is the issur of yichud and negiyah with a girl start when there begin to be changes in her body that can be as early as 7, 8, or 9. Okay, so again, I don't want to give you a definitive psak on this, but the point is, these issurim do not kick in until a certain age. But the issue becomes, do they apply to adopted children? So a majority of poskim actually say that because adoption is not a biological bond, the heter of a mother and a son, or a father and a daughter, does not apply to an adopted child. And therefore, at whatever age the prohibition kicks in, mom would not be allowed to hug son if son is 9 years old, or dad could not hug daughter at whatever age a yichud comes in, because adoption does not equal biological bond. And for this reason, the issur of yichud would exist, as well as the issur of negiyah. There is one opinion that takes an opposite position, and this is the opinion of the Tzitz Eliezer, great Pasuk in Yerushalayim, of the Eliezer of Oldenburg. And even he said the heter is not simple, but because of the need of children for emotional connection with their parents, he thought there would be a basis to be makom. And his argument is the following. The heter of mother, son, father, daughter, he said, is not because of biology. Rather, it comes from the fact that when you raise someone from infancy in a non-pathological person, there will be no sexual desires. So he said, it doesn't depend on biological connection. It depends on raising the child from infancy. Therefore, Rav Volkenberg said, that if you adopted an infant, which he defines as less than a year old, then he said there would be no issur of mother to son, or father to daughter, or brother to sister, for that matter, be the same thing, because they all grew up in the same household from infancy. This was his chiddush. Now, I want to point out that even like Rav Oldenburg's kula, if you adopt an older child, there absolutely will be the issur of yichud and negiyah. So if you adopt even a 2-year-old, even a 1.5-year-old, you'd have to be machmer. Certainly if you adopt a 5-year-old. Now again, I don't mean immediately. You'd have to be machmer at whatever age.
But 9 to 3 would have
whatever it kicks in.
But, so you're saying the role for saying an adopted child, adopted girl by 3?
No. I didn't say Rove used the age of 3. No. I just said...
Even if Rove uses the age of 7 or 8.
That's correct.
In other words, my point being, whatever, I simply gave 3 as the answer, as the example.
Yep.
I'm astonished.
Yes.
If you polled the group, we'd all be astonished.
Listen, I have to be honest with you. Rove Poskim and Rav Oldenburg even says that in his tshuva. Do consider the issur of yichud and negiyah to be fully enforced at whatever age it kicks in. Rav Oldenburg is a Das Yochid. I will also tell you that in my own kehila, I was always maker like Rav Oldenburg. I was maker like Rav Oldenburg simply because what Rav Oldenburg identified is very, very significant. Adopted children need to feel
doctor's allowed to touch a patient because there's a certain need. Yes, why can't there be a psychological need?
There is a major difference. The concept of the doctor is a non-affectionate, non-sexual, well, not as a non-affectionate touching. So consequently, since he's doing it for professional reasons, there is detachment. Remember, ultimately, Yichud and Negiya are based on things that are conducive to sexual arousal. So the theory is professional touching generally negates sexual arousal. Now, here, even though obviously it's parental love, but love is love in a sense, so there is this fear that God forbid there could be aroused. Now, what's interesting is, I want to raise this interesting question. You know, you gave me the example of the father who had never seen this child. Let's imagine this. Let's flip it around. The adoptive parent is the one that raised the child from infancy, but is not biological. What if you have biological who never raised the child at all? What if you have, an interesting child, biological parent shows up when his daughter is 12 years old? There might be a sort, this is where Rav Goldenberg's analysis might actually be a chumrah in that rare case. Because if Rav Goldenberg says the heter of father-daughter and mother-son is not based on it's not based on biology, it's based on rearing, then it might turn out that the biological parent who has no connection to the child, there might be an issue. Now, maybe so. He doesn't say, but there might be something. The daughter wouldn't want it anyway. But,
The question would be, what if two people adopt a child?
Yeah.
What if the parents, if they get divorced or they, when it passes away, what happens with the parent remaining with the child?
You've had a very interesting problem. If you don't accept Rav Goldenberg's exactly, like Rav Goldenberg, there would be no issue either. But if you don't, you follow.
If the child is under 1 year.
Oh, they adopt him when he.
Let's say, you can adopt a child at 3 years.
Okay. If he's an older adoption, let's say. Okay. That is a shrekless of different difficult problem. They're going to have to arrange it that there wouldn't be an issue. Mm-hmm. Now, there are different ways of getting around it. They could, maybe an open doorway might be permitted, but what do you do at night, as they say? It would be a real problem.
What about a second marriage?
Well, the second marriage would be the same as an adoption. The question is, second marriage would be a problem. But as I say, a woman can have, any married woman can have yichud with any man if her husband is in the vicinity, even not in the house. So, depending on the configuration, if it's the woman that is the second marriage, there would be no issue.
You're talking about the children vis-a-vis the parents.
No, but it's the same thing. What I'm saying is...
Her children, his children.
Oh, in terms of brother, sister.
Her children and his children, and they get married.
Yes. Well, again, in Hilchos Shlita, maybe I'll give a whole share of Hilchos Shlita to clarify this. For example, the children can be alone with each other if the parents are home, because the parents are considered to be a chaperone or a shomer. So there would be a problem if the kids are home alone. That would be a problem. That would indeed be a problem. So one has to be very, very aware.
Vis-a-vis the parents, their new mother or their new father.
There would be an Isser Yichud, but as I say, vis-a-vis the new mother, as long as their father is in town, even if he's at work, they could have yichud with their new stepmother. The problem would be greater if the girls are having yichud with their new father and the mother is not home. That would be a more serious problem, because the mother being in the city is not enough to monitor yichud with them and a man. Keep in mind, though, as well, that two men, are allowed to have yichud with a woman as long as they're not prutzim. So if you have more than one boy, that itself would be much. It's only two women cannot have yichud with a man. All right, so these are things to be aware of. And by conversion, it's really the flip side. Because by conversion, there, even though halakhically it's like adoption, but since there's also the biological love, even the poskim who say that in a pure adoption there is an irzu yichud, in a family that converts, there would not be an issue, right? Because you do have the biological connection as well. So even though it's true that I equated before conversion to adoption, it would not be for this chumrah. The chumrah of yichud would not apply there. So we do allow converted children to have yichud with their converted parents because the biological bond is still going to be present. Now, let me backtrack for a moment. We talked about conversion of babies. What happens if a woman converts when she's pregnant? Interesting question. A woman is pregnant, let's say a non-Jewish woman, and it really makes no difference if she was impregnated by a Jew or a non-Jew, because the kids are non-Jewish in any event, but she converts while she is pregnant. So the Gemara has a colorful phrase to describe this phenomenon. This is called Horaso Shelo B'Kedusha. The conception was not in holiness, V'Leidaso B'Kedusha, but the birth was in holiness. Now, here is the conceptual question. Are these children born Jews? Because they were born from a Jewish mother? Or are they converted Jews? Are they David?
Yes.
Or are they Jewish? Well, either way, they're Jewish. They're Jewish for sure, but are they Jews by conversion? Or are they Jews by birth? And this is extremely important for the following way. If they are Jews by conversion, then they too would have the right to renounce when they reach bar mitzvah. Because essentially, it's just a baby that was converted. If they are Jews by birth, they would not have that right. So that's very, very important to know. From the Gemara, it implies that since they were conceived as non-Jews, they need conversion, but the mother going to the mikveh is a valid conversion. They don't have to go to the mikveh again, in other words. Which means they need conversion, but the mother's conversion converts them. In other words, the mother's mikveh. And the Gemara even asks the Kasha, why isn't the mother's body a chatzitza? When you go to the mikveh, they say, here, the baby is encased by the mother's body, let it be a chatzitza. And the Gemara's answer is that since the baby lives off the mother's body, so this is like part of the baby's life. Now, what's fascinating is this. This has, now it may be very rare that that pregnant women convert. Usually a basin will not convert a pregnant woman precisely because of this uncertainty. What is the status of the children? But this has repercussions in a very important area of fertility technology. And we discussed maybe 2 months ago the whole problem of egg donation or surrogate motherhood, which is vice versa. In other words, the egg is from a non-Jew, it's fertilized in vitro, and it's transplanted into the womb of a Jewish woman. Is the child Jewish, or does the child need conversion? Are you discussing now? Here, we bring the following proof. If the Gemara tells us that if a non-Jewish woman conceives a child, the embryo needs to be converted, that means being born from a Jewish mother doesn't make you Jewish if the embryo was non-Jewish at the time of conception. So it would turn out, if you need a conversion, then it would turn out, in the case of an egg donation from a non-Jewish woman, even though it was born from a Jewish mother. See, if you think about this, this is exactly Horaso Shelo B'Kedusha, V'Leidaso B'Kedusha, except in two women's bodies instead of one woman's body. Right? In other words, the conception was Shelo B'Kedusha, the Leida was B'Kedusha, you need conversion. Right? So it's an interesting question. So that halacha that says the kids are converted by the Yoris would indicate, in the case of surrogacy, that if a Jewish woman gives birth, the kids would still need a conversion. Yeah.
What if a pregnant woman who was Jewish and had the non-Jewish baby went to the mikveh?
Excellent question. That's a machlokas haposkim. Some poskim say you don't need a conversion, you just need a dunk. So the Jewish woman could go to the mikveh, but in front of a basin, and that could be the conversion. That's an excellent point. Meaning,
what was the case?
No, the case is this. You have a non-Jewish egg fertilized, and then it's transplanted into a Jewish woman. So I concluded, based on the din of Horaso Shelo B'Kedusha, the kids need a conversion. So the suggestion is, well, maybe you don't have to convert them. Maybe the Jewish woman, the captain of them, can just go to the mikveh. L'shem converting the embryo.
But you know where I got that from? Yeah. Because if the goy can go to the mikveh while she's pregnant, and the child is born a Jew,
That's right. So the machlokas haposkim is, when the Gemara says the mother's immersion can be effective to convert the embryos, is that only when she herself is undergoing conversion? Or can it just be any dunk in the mikveh, even if she's already Jewish? Right, that's a machlokas within the machlokas. Right, that's right.
Would
the
status of the child be an adopted child or her own one?
Say,
she's pregnant.
No,
if the child is a surrogate. Yeah, okay, let's say the mother is non-Jewish and she gets into the mikveh and the child is being born.
Yes.
Is it adopted?
The child would be adopted according to this. Yes. Because the child
after the child was born, it would be as if it's adopted?
Oh, no. Well, okay. So it's a tricky question. The way it works is a little different. The child's on your way to conversion, but since after the conversion it was born of a Jewish mother, the child is a natural born child of the mother. So it's complicated.
No different with its father.
Well, with respect to the father, it's an adopted child. With respect to the father, it's an adopted child. With respect to the mother, it is a natural child. So as a result, vis-a-vis yichud with the father, we would be back to the tzitz Eliezer.
Even if it's the biological father?
No, you're right. No, you're right. Because then we would treat it like any case of conversion. You know, for sure. No, you're right. Meaning, remember we said, by any conversion, even though you erase the bonds, there is no issue with the biological parent. So, again, in terms of halacha, natural child of mother, it is the adopted child of father. That's correct. With respect to yichud, however, we're going to permit it either way, because this type of adoption where the father is both the biological and the raising parent, that's going to be mutter. That's correct, yeah. That is correct. Yeah.
What's the halakhic process of the adoption?
Okay, I'm going to have to stop there. But basically, the only halakhic process of adoption is the conversion. There is no halakhic process called adoption. Adoption is a secular legal proceeding that was invented by Roman law. The only term, imutz yiladim is a modern Hebrew term. The only term that halacha recognizes is megadel yasum. So according to halacha, it makes a difference if I formally adopt or I raise a child. All of these halachas are going to be the same. Okay, have a good weekend.